For the past 2 weeks, the Trump administration has been slammed for a supposedly tepid response to anti-Semitic attacks on cemeteries and threats to Jewish community centers. Trump himself was smashed over and over for suggesting that the threats might be coming from left-wing provocateurs attempting to cast a shadow on his administration. He was widely mocked for such an assertion. Pretty much everyone on the left assumed that the JCC threats had to be coming from Trump supporters, including The Intercept, a left-wing publication that headlined just 2 days ago, "Trump can't accept his allies are targeting Jews, so he blames his opponents." It now turns out that the culprit, at one point, worked for The Intercept. On Friday, a Missouri man named Juan Thompson was arrested for making multiple threats to JCCs across the country in order to harass his ex-girlfriend. Thompson is suspected of being a copycat of hearing about the JCC phone calls and then conducting his own campaign of phone terrorism. According to the FBI, Thompson dated a Jewish woman. After their relationship ended, he sent defamatory emails and faxes to her employer. He then stalked her. After that, he made, quote, at least 8 JCC threats nationwide as part of his campaign against his ex-girlfriend. He then tried to blame the woman in order to have her prosecuted. He tweeted, quote, "Know any good lawyers? Need to stop this nasty, racist, hashtag white girl I dated who sent a bomb threat in my name and wants me to be raped in jail," unquote. So here's what we know about Thompson. He's a left-wing reporter who made up material while working at The Intercept. He was fired in February 2016 for fabricating quotes in his stories and creating, quote, fake email accounts that he used to impersonate people, one of which was a Gmail account in the name of the editor-in-chief of the publication. He says he voted for Bernie Sanders. Thompson, who is black, tweeted just 2 weeks ago that Trump was attempting to, quote, remove black people from the south side of Chicago. Naturally, folks on the right are triumphantly pointing out the irony. The guy behind the JCC threats isn't a Trump backer, but a left-wing fake news guy who hates Trump, who for weeks the left stated, this had to be an outgrowth of Trumpian anti-Semitism. But let's be fair for a second. The guy sounds like a complete nut job, not just a left-winger gone awry. According to the FBI, this was all designed to act out some sort of personal vendetta against an old girlfriend who was Jewish. The Jews were only involved insofar as they could be used as a tool against her. It doesn't make the guy's conduct any less egregious or anti-Semitic, but it doesn't really seem to connect to an ideology so much as a desire to hurt somebody he knew by using anti-Semitism. Furthermore, there's still another suspect out there. Dozens of JCCs have been called, and this terrorist was a copycat. But, this is evidence that while the left-wing media constantly accuses the right of jumping to conclusions about terrorism and ignoring right-wing terror involvement, the left has a major blind spot for its own extremists. And you just know that Trump's Twitter feed this morning will be totally epic. I'm Ben Shapiro. This is The Ben Shapiro Show. Okay, so we'll talk a little bit more about that story. I also want to talk about these Yemen raids and what we know about them and why exactly it's ridiculous the way that the Democrats are treating this whole thing. But first, I want to say thank you to our advertisers over at Zeel.com, Z-E-E-L.com. So I first have to tell you a story about Zeel that actually happened the past week. So my sister, who lives in a major East Coast city, she woke up in the morning, she was having serious neck trouble, like so much so that she was basically on the verge of tears, just really excruciating. So she called my parents, and my parents were very sweet. They immediately went to Zeel.com and they booked her a masseuse for that same day. The masseuse came over and fixed her right up. She was as good as new as soon as the masseuse left. That's what Zeel.com does for you. They have 5-star top quality massage and it comes to your house. It's not very expensive and you can schedule it and they come directly to you. They bring the table, they bring the scents, they bring the masseuse, they bring it directly to you, Zeel.com. And if you love a good massage but you don't have time to schedule it at the spa and you don't want to wait for 2 weeks and you just want it right now, then you need to go to Zeel.com. They cost on average 20 to 50% less than going to a local spa or hotel. You don't have to wait for an appointment. And you schedule, you book, the payment is fast and easy, even the tip is included in the payment. My mother-in-law has stolen my Zeel.com massage. My sister has had one, and they both just rave about it. They say it's fantastic. Right now, you get $25 off your first massage if you use promo code BEN at checkout. It's Zeel, Z-E-E-L.com. Make sure to add promo code at the end and use that checkout code BEN. That makes sure that they know that we sent you. And also, you get that $25 off your massage, Zeel.com, or you can go to the iPhone or Android app and get a special offer when you try Zeel today. Enter promo code BEN at checkout. Get that $25 off your first in-home on-demand massage. They have 8,000 licensed massage therapists all across the country, and they bring the comfort to you. It's an amazing service. I highly recommend it. So does my sister. So does my mother-in-law. Zeel.com, promo code BEN. Okay, so I want to start off today talking a little bit about the fact that the Democrats have gone crazy over this Yemen raid. So a lot of their upset over what happened the other night with Donald Trump and his speech to a joint session of Congress was that moment with Carrie Owens, who's the wife of the Karen Owens, the wife of Ryan Owens, who's the Navy SEAL, who was killed in this Yemen raid. And the left has been saying that it's just terrible. Donald Trump used her. He brought her out there and he used her. And I got a bunch of questions about this. People who are saying that it's just ridiculous he did use her, or is it bad that he used her? Here's my view of politicians, just to be clear about this, my view of politicians using, victims to promote their political agenda. It's bad. I don't like it. I don't know that's what Trump was doing with Karen Owens. If he was doing it in order to get the Yemen issue off the table, yeah, that's kind of yucky. At the same time, what it really was him honoring a vet. And if the issue was we need to draw closer to our vets, then I'm all for it. So it's not quite the same thing as bringing out the victim of gun violence issue like Piers Morgan did in order to claim that everyone who disagrees with you on gun violence is some sort of evil person who wants people to get shot. It's more, here's the widow of a hero, let's pay her tribute. That's not the same thing in my mind whatsoever. But I want to talk about the Democrats' reaction to the Yemen raid because it really is telling. So here's what you need to know about the Yemen raid. Let's go through what actually happened. We haven't talked at length about this, so I want to lay out the timeline. This is according to the Washington Post. So on November 7th of last year, CENTCOM, U.S. Central Command, told the Pentagon about a plan to raid al-Qaeda in Yemen. The Defense Department approved the plan December 19th while Obama was still president, and the Obama administration apparently took a look at it. Then, once Trump was president, he was briefed, and Defense Secretary Mattis recommended support for the raid. Trump was briefed a bunch of times. He finally authorized the raid January 26th or 27th. On January 28th, the raid happened. Apparently, it went wrong. Al-Qaeda apparently knew the Americans were coming and attacked from a building upon which American forces had to call in an airstrike. So they were using the building as a front, basically hiding behind women and children, because that's what terrorists do. And we called in an airstrike, took out the building, and it killed a bunch of civilians. When our soldiers were in trouble, we also tried to send in an MV-22 Osprey aircraft, which is like a $75 million aircraft, and it ended up crashing, and we had to destroy the aircraft so the enemy didn't get a hold of it. The Washington Post reported that 14 militants were killed, terrorists were killed, as were Owens and numerous civilians. The dead included the 8-year-old daughter of Anwar al-Awlaki, who is the cleric that we droned under President Obama a few years ago. Several female terrorists ran to planned fighting positions, opened fire on the SEALs, according to U.S. military officials. Trump was in the White House during the raid, and he was tweeting during the raid. So what's the great objection over this whole thing? What is the grand objection? So there are two objections. One is there's an objection saying that Trump never should have greenlit the raid, that it was a risky raid. He did it in order to show that he was macho. I haven't really seen the evidence of that. Mattis approved it. It seems to me that if Mattis approves it, it's totally fair for Trump to rely on the judgment of a guy who should know much better than he should, General Mattis, who has been doing this sort of stuff his entire life. And then there is the second problem. And this is where the left says, this mission was a disaster and it was a giant failure. This is the part I object to. So I guess the idea here is that if Trump could have just droned the site a la Obama and not risked American lives, that would have been better. And that would have been better if specifically because no intelligence was found. So there's now a controversy over whether we found usable, verifiable intel at this place or not. So apparently the SEALs went in, they grabbed hard drives, they grabbed laptops, they grabbed cell phones, and there's now an argument from leakers versus the administration. The administration says there's intel that we can use, and the leakers say there is no intel that we can use. But here's my question. Why should that matter? How are the SEALs supposed to know what intel is? How's the Defense Department supposed to know what intel is on the phones or the computer? They don't have the phone or the computer. If they could have hacked them, they would have hacked them. Right? So they collected the materials and somebody died in the line of duty. I don't understand why if the mission went bad, that is somehow a referendum on the president. And I don't like this in general. I really don't like this in general because the idea seems to be that if somebody is part of a mission that fails, somehow their life was wasted or somehow that's the fault of the president that the mission failed. That's a pretty dangerous standard. And to be fair, I think President Trump, when he was just Donald Trump, he promulgated this. He's the sort of fellow who ripped the Bush administration and sort of implied that we had wasted thousands of lives in Iraq. Which is really gross, because here's the truth. In a war on terror, in any war, there will be missions that are successful and there will be missions that are unsuccessful. You're not of more value because you were part of a mission that was unsuccessful than if you were part of a mission that was successful. If you died at the first Battle of Bull Run as a Union soldier, that didn't make your life any less valuable than if you died as a Union soldier at the second Battle of Bull Run, which the Union won. It's silly to try and say that if a mission goes bad or a battle goes bad, the people who are in the bad mission are somehow less valuable or they wasted their lives or the botch was definitely the fault of the president of the United States, as though every mission is going to be successful. War isn't science, and not every operation is going to go as planned. Now, a lot of people on the left are saying, well, Trump isn't getting the sort of flack over the Yemen raid that Obama got over Benghazi. Right, and he shouldn't, because those are two completely different things. Okay, and I'll tell you why. There were a lot of military missions under Obama that went wrong. There were missions where SEALs got killed. And you really didn't hear the American people or the people on the right making too big an issue of it, because we understand in a war there are going to be some missions that go wrong, that are badly planned, badly coordinated, or where the crap just hits the fan. But that's not what happened in Benghazi. In Benghazi, it wasn't a mission. Benghazi was an ambassador sitting there requesting help for months and months and months, didn't get it, and then things went bad. That's not the same thing as a military mission where we don't have all the information. They had every bit of information. It wasn't a military attack. It wasn't an attack intended to go after the bad guys. It was literally a guy sitting in an office in Benghazi, and he was attacked by a bunch of terrorists. And the Obama administration should have known that that was going to happen and done something to protect him or withdraw him ASAP. That's their fault. So equating Benghazi with the Yemen raid is really illogical and quite foolish, but it just demonstrates the extent to which the left is going to go in order to push this agenda. And it's really, I think, incredible the extent to which they'll go in order to push their agenda. The latest example of this is the attempt to go after Jeff Sessions. So as I said yesterday, I talked about the Jeff Sessions issue. Attorney General Sessions has now recused himself from any investigation of Trump-Russia connections or connections between the Trump campaign and the Russians. And the Democrats are saying it's not enough for him to recuse, he should resign. So I want to go through how this broke down, because the truth is he should recuse, he should not resign. And it is very silly for the Democrats to claim this. And also, the Trump administration really has to get their comms office in order. They do need to get their communications office in order, because it just looks messy. And that feeling of chaos is not helpful. So here's how all this started. Flashback to January of this year, Al Franken, senator from Minnesota, he asks Jeff Sessions during his confirmation hearings, did you have talks with the Russians? And here's what Sessions says.
These documents also allegedly say, quote, there was a continuing exchange of information during the campaign between Trump surrogates and intermediaries for the Russian government. And if there is any evidence that anyone affiliated with the Trump campaign communicated with the Russian government in the course of this campaign, what will you do?
Senator Franken, I'm not aware of any of those activities. I have been called a surrogate at a time or two in that campaign, and I did not have communications with the Russians, and I'm unable to comment on it.
Okay, so people take this. There's two ways to read this exchange. One is that Sessions is saying, as a campaign surrogate, I did not have contact with the Russians, and the other is, I didn't have contact with the Russians, and I was a campaign surrogate. And those are both plausible readings. It seems to me that the question was, do you know if anyone from the Trump campaign had contact with the Russians? And he is saying, I never had contact with the Russians. And then it turns out that he had two meetings with the ambassador, a guy named Sergei Krysliak, which is just the typical Russian ambassador name. He's, by the way, Sergei Krysliak is getting more attention this week than he will up to the week that Putin murders him. But in any case, Stuart Smalley asked Sandy Griffith about this. And, you know, this becomes a big issue, because the idea now is that somehow Sessions has something to hide. Somehow he's working with the Russians to do something nefarious. Now, look, I think that is wildly exaggerated. I don't think there's a lot of evidence that Sessions was doing anything nefarious. There are lots of senators who have met, but that's not really the issue. The issue is whether he lied about it. It's whether he covered it up, whether there was anything to cover up is another issue. But just like it seems everything in politics now boils down to, if you're not totally transparent and forthright at the very beginning, then you get smacked. Which is why it seems to me, if you can't identify any wrongdoing, but all you can identify is that somebody, you know, misheard the question or answered wrong, or even if he lied, you know, if he lied, I guess that's perjury and he should resign. But if it just looks like what it is, which is he answered the question as I was a campaign surrogate for Trump and I didn't have any meetings with the Russians, and he never thought, well, I'm a senator and I had a meeting with the Russian ambassador. You know, that seems to me, okay, recuse, because it is a, you know, it gives a scalp to the Democrats, I suppose. But the truth is that it looks mildly compromised. So recuse, let your deputy do all the work. What's the big deal? But don't resign. But the left has to play this over the top. So Chuck Schumer says it's not enough for Sessions to recuse himself. The Senate Minority Leader says that Sessions should resign.
For weeks, I have said that Attorney General Sessions needs to recuse himself from any investigation into contacts between the president and his associates on the campaign and transition and Russia. For weeks, I made clear that I believe Attorney General Sessions' close relationship with the Trump campaign requires that he recuse himself from the executive branch investigation into ties between the Trump campaign and Russia.
Okay, and so this is over the top, obviously, because Democrats feel like there's blood in the water. Now, part of the problem here is how the Trump administration handled this. So what they should have said is Sessions should have answered more specifically. He didn't do anything wrong, but to avoid the appearance of impropriety, he's going to recuse himself. That's the way you handle this. Instead, what you end up with, because this is always the way it works with the Trump administration, they need to get their comm office in order. Instead, what you get is this mass confusion before Sessions recuses himself. So Trump comes out, he says, we have total confidence in Sessions, and he shouldn't recuse himself.
Mr. President, do you still have confidence in the Attorney General, sir?
Total.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Heads up, please. Heads up.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. President, should Sessions recuse himself from investigations into your campaign in Russia?
I don't think so at all.
When did you first learn that Sessions spoke to the Russian ambassador? Did you know during the campaign?
I don't think he should do that at all.
When were you aware that he spoke to the Russian ambassador?
I wasn't aware at all.
When did
you find out? Do you think he should have spoken truthfully about whether he had spoken to the ambassador?
He probably did.
Yeah, Trump's pretty grumpy about all this, and I think he has a right to be grumpy about all this because it's really silly. It's really silly, okay? Every senator has met with Kislyak or Russian members of the administration. You know, Obama, I guess, had Kislyak into the White House like 22 times. So, again, there's no underlying problem here, but should Sessions have answered that he never, ever spoke with anybody from Russia? Clearly not. Could he have misremembered? Sure. Is it a big deal? No. But again, Trump says he shouldn't recuse himself. And then Paul Ryan says that Sessions should not recuse himself.
Well, okay, the two questions. First, I will just refer to the Senate Judiciary Committee. I checked the transcript and all of that, so I can't speak to what the Judiciary Committee transcript is. Frankly, I haven't read that. Should he recuse himself? I think he answered that question this morning, which is if he himself is the subject of an investigation, of course he would. But if he's not, I don't see any purpose or reason to doing this.
And so that's the answer, right? And it's the consistent answer. You're Ted Cruz, and he said it's the same thing. There's a lot of political theater, and he's right. So there's a good grounds here. If you're going to say don't recuse yourself, and everybody's immediately going to say don't recuse yourself, then don't recuse yourself. The problem is that Sessions then recused himself, which makes it look like there is something more going on. It's just stupid politics. They should have come out yesterday morning, and as a body, they should have said exactly what I said, right? They should have said he didn't do anything wrong, but he misremembered, and that gives the appearance of impropriety. He's going to recuse himself just so that everything looks perfectly clean. Now, before I go any further, I want to make you guys an offer as listeners and watchers of The Ben Shapiro Show. This is an offer that you can't get anywhere else because it is actually super duper cool. Would you like $1,500 to buy the gun of your dreams? Really, $1,500 to buy the gun of your dreams? Well, they need to work with my friends at the United States Concealed Carry Association. So USCCA is changing the game for responsible gun owners like you and me and preparing us for everything that comes before, during, and after a self-defense shooting. So they have they teach you how to use your gun. They teach you how to act during, if something bad happens, during some breaks into your house, how to treat that. And then they also help you with defense afterward, because just because you did the right thing doesn't mean that you won't, the police won't arrest you. So you have to have people to help you out. That's what the U.S. Concealed Carry Association does. And, what they're doing right now is actually super cool, which is they want to get 10 people in my audience $1,500 to buy the gun of their dreams. So if you want an AR-15 or if you want a custom 1911, any gun that you're dreaming of could be yours, because over at USCCA, they've started a website, defendmyfamilynow.com, and you can enter for the chance to win that $1,500. So go over to defendmyfamilynow.com, enter for that free chance to win $1,500 toward any gun that you want. It's super cool. DefendMyFamilyNow.com. And check out their membership program. There's nothing out there like it. Again, they have all sorts of services they provide to gun owners, information, classes, defense. They're the people that you need to talk to. If you are, as a gun owner, I will say, I think USCCA, the U.S. Concealed Carry Association, is indispensable. You should certainly get a membership. You should be working with them. If you're a responsible gun owner, you almost have a responsibility to work with them. Plus, it's kind of cool that right now you do have that shot to win $1,500 to buy any gun that you want at defendmyfamilynow.com. Defendmyfamilynow.com. Go over and check them out. The U.S. Concealed Carry Association. Okay, so Sessions, all this happens, and then Sessions finally recuses himself. So you have the entire Trump administration. Again, the confusion is the part that I think is frustrating to people. They all say he shouldn't recuse himself, not going to recuse himself. And then Sessions comes out and he says, yeah, I guess I'll recuse myself.
And my staff recommended recusal. They said that since I had involvement with the campaign, I should not be involved in any campaign investigation. I have studied the rules and considered their comments and evaluation. I believe those recommendations are right and just. Therefore, I have recused myself in the matters that deal with the Trump campaign. The exact language of that recusal is in the press release that we will give to you.
Okay, so again, the whole thing looks shadier than it is, just because when you botch communications, it matters. Somebody needs to get that White House press, that White House communications in order. They really need to get this crap in order, because, again, the more they do this, the more amateurish it looks, and that's just a problem. It's a problem. It's going to dog them. Also, I would like to see a full investigation so that we could get all of this behind us. It's either true or it's not true. If it's not true, then I'd like this cloud to dissipate. And if it is true, I'd like to know it. And I think we have a right to know it. Okay, so if you want to listen to the rest of the show, you're going to have to go over to dailywire.com, watch the rest of the show at dailywire.com. $8 a month will gain you access. We're going to talk about more today, including the Democratic narrative about Trump, how they're trying to destroy Trump, the Republican counter-narrative. And then, shockingly, the media actually sort of got it right a little bit yesterday, which we'll talk about too. But you have to go to dailywire.com for all of that. $8 a month makes you a subscriber. We have the Shapiro store coming soon. If you're an annual subscriber, then you're going to be able to get a copy, a free DVD copy of The Arroyo, which is a fantastic movie from Jeremy Boring about what's going on at the southern border. A fictional film, really exciting, really topical. The Arroyo, you get that for free when you become an annual subscriber over at dailywire.com, or listen later at iTunes and SoundCloud when we upload the entire show, and make sure that you leave a review at iTunes. We are the top conservative podcast in the nation. So one of the things that's making people more suspicious about Sessions, even though there really is not much to be suspicious about, is that Sessions originally said that he never met with the Russians. And then he said, I never met with the Russians about the campaign. And then he said, I don't really remember what we talked about. And the story kept kind of changing a little bit. So here's Sessions saying he never met with the Russians about the campaign.
First, about the comments that I made to the committee that have been said to be incorrect and false, let me be clear. I never had meetings with Russian operatives or Russian intermediaries about the Trump campaign. And the idea that I was part of a, quote, continuing exchange of information during the campaign between Trump surrogates and intermediaries for the Russian government is totally false.
Okay, so, and I believe him here. I think that he's telling the truth. But then he had said that he didn't really remember the conversation, and now he says he totally remembers every aspect of it. Again, all of this could have been very simply avoided and easily avoided. So the counter-narrative that Trump is trying to present now is that everybody on the left met with the Russians, so what's the big deal? Again, I think that the left is focusing in on the fact that Sessions may have fibbed, or at least misremembered what happened when he met with the Russians. Trump himself is now tweeting out, so he reads the Drudge Report, obviously. So the Drudge Report ran a big picture of Chuck Schumer having a donut with Vladimir Putin when Putin visited New York, and Trump then tweeted out this morning, we should start an immediate investigation into Senator Schumer and his ties to Russia and Putin, a total hypocrite. As though the only issue here was that people met with Putin and the Russians. That's really not what the issue was. The entire issue, if there was one, is that Sessions didn't tell the truth under oath about it, which is a little bit of a problem. Chuck Schumer immediately responded, by the way, happily talk, re my contact with Mr. Putin and his associates took place in 2003 in full view of press and public under oath. Would you and your team? And this is why it's a little bit of a box of worms, and this is why transparency is always the best policy on this sort of stuff, because the longer this drags out, the more people are going to ask questions, justified or unjustified. And that's what Democrats are doing. They're using the absence of evidence to prove that there is actually evidence. They're trying to say that we can't see inside this black box over here. That means what's in the black box is something nefarious. So another angle they're using to do this is, of course, Trump's tax returns. I would like to see Trump's tax returns. I don't know why he's hiding his tax returns. I've said this consistently throughout the campaign. I think that the presidents of the United States, we should know all of their financial relationships. Chris Matthews, or whatever, he's trying to make the case now that it's deeply, deeply important that that Trump's tax returns be shown because there might be something nefarious in it.
President Trump wouldn't release his tax returns during his campaign, but political pressure is building for the president to do just that, at least turn it over to the Intelligence Committee so they can look at it. We're going to talk about that and a lot more in Harbaugh. By the way, he's not going to give away his tax returns. We can pound on that door and pound on that door, and he ain't giving away because there's a lot in there he doesn't want us to know, like how about not paying taxes?
Okay, so again, now he's implying that Trump never paid taxes at all, but that rumor was already out there. Again, transparency would be the best policy. They're using the fact that Trump isn't transparent in order to hit him, which means to me that Trump should be as transparent as possible, unless there's actually something there. He's not the only one saying this. Obviously, Chris Matthews, I'm going to say, get up and come to the show and talk about tax returns. He's not the only one. Joel Benenson is a former Clinton campaign official, and he says that Russian influence should have been a major influence in the election.
Well, three states were very close, Greta. I mean, if you look at Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, it's a total of about 75,000 votes across three states that tipped the Electoral College one way or the other. Look, I think in a campaign in the late stages, it's always new information, unanticipated events that have a dramatic effect, just like FBI Director Comey's letter to Congress on October 28th. Had a dramatic effect, and it turned out to be nothing. But this,
we can stop it there. But when he says this, it's pretty clear that Trump is right when he says they are just pissed that they lost the election, and that's why they're making a big deal out of that. And that's the Republican narrative. So Jeff Sessions comes out yesterday, and he says basically this is a witch hunt. Trump called it a witch hunt as well.
So the president, whom you serve, has described these questions as a witch hunt and has said that we need to investigate the leaks that have led to this and to a bunch of these different stories. Do you agree with that?
Well, we are having a lot of leaks today in Washington that I do believe are troubling. A lot of it would appear to be in violation of the law. And it's an unhealthy trend, and we've got to do better about it. I do believe every department needs to take a greater interest in maintaining proper security.
Well, this is the right-wing narrative here, and he goes on, he says that it's kind of a witch hunt. So the left-wing narrative is nefarious contacts with Russia that everybody's lying about. Not a lot of evidence that that's really what's going on here. And then the right-wing narrative is it's a witch hunt that's coming from inside the Obama state because Obama left a bunch of leftover staffers and they're leaking everything and they're making trouble. There's some truth to both of these things. Trump should be transparent about all of his connections. All of his officials should be completely transparent about his connections. If he wants to have a successful administration, he should be out front about all of this. And there's still a lot that we don't know about Donald Trump's relationship with Russia and with his advisors' relationships with Russia. And I want to know the answers. I don't think that that's a partisan point. I think that we should know why Paul Manafort had contacts with Russia. I would like to know why Michael Flynn had contacts with Russia. Jeff Sessions I'm less worried about because, again, he's a senator who meets with the Russian ambassador. That doesn't seem to me the same thing as Michael Flynn flying to Russia, hanging out with Vladimir Putin in Russia today, or Paul Manafort actually making money from the Ukrainian regime that was allied with the Putin administration. That I don't think is the same. But by the same token, I think that it's fair to call for more information from the Trump administration. I also think that the problem of leaks is a serious problem. So both things can be true at once. And Obama clearly has stacked this administration with a bunch of insiders who are now going to leak as much material as they can about President Trump, which is really egregious. And it's why Trump needs to wipe the place top to bottom. Amazingly enough, even the media is starting to realize and even the media is starting to say that a lot of this is overblown. And this is what the media should be doing. The media should be tamping this stuff down. They should be tamping down the speculation. What they should, instead of playing up what don't we know about Trump and Russia, instead what they should be saying is, here's what we do know. We know that there were some communications between Trump campaign officials and the Russians. We don't know what the content of those was. We don't have evidence that it was nefarious. There's a lot of contact between foreign officials and campaigns on a regular basis in campaigns. Does it merit more investigation? Sure. But to jump immediately to Trump is some sort of Russian agent or Jeff Sessions is some sort of Russian agent, which is just absurd, that makes the media look really stupid. By the same token, the media should be saying about these leaks, yes, we're glad we get more information out of them, but the leaks themselves are a problem and they're a problem for any administration. It seems like, oddly enough, there are some members of the media starting to do this. So I was shocked by this. CNN's Erin Burnett. She was talking about Claire McCaskill. Claire McCaskill is a senator from Missouri, and she said that she had never met the Russian ambassador because she's a member of the Armed Services Committee, saying it's weird for Sessions to do it. And then it turns out that she met with him in 2013. Watch Claire McCaskill actually ask, I think it's Luis Gutierrez, about it.
When you say I don't believe the Attorney General of the United States, all right, so you believe he's not telling the truth when he said that. I have to ask you about this, though, because it's important to understand whether this is partisan. Senator Claire McCaskill's on the same committee Sessions was on when he met with the Russian ambassador. Today, she tweeted this morning. You probably saw it. Let me read it for anyone who didn't. I've been on the Armed Services Committee for 10 years. No call or meeting with Russian ambassador, period, ever, period. Ambassadors call members of Foreign Relations Committee. Okay, but that's not true. We were able to determine that was false based on her Twitter feed itself. She tweeted twice she'd met with the Russian ambassador. She clarified one of the meetings was on adoptions. But how is that any different than Sessions, who says when he was asked, he didn't bring it up because it was about Ukraine?
It's a very big difference. He said it after he said he would tell the truth, the whole truth, the whole truth, Aaron, and nothing but the truth. It's just not credible to believe that he would now all of a sudden.
But isn't each of these things a lie? One's a lie, isn't the other a lie?
But then why did he wait? Why did he wait until yesterday when the Washington Post, we know what they do. They have this incredible inability to tell the truth. And when the
this
truth
weak
comes
tea from Gutierrez, good for, I want to point out when the media do something right, because I don't think that it's fair to the media to only point out when they do things that are wrong. Aaron Burnett is asking exactly the right question here. It is a partisan witch hunt. It absolutely is. Does that mean, again, that we shouldn't have more information? Of course we should have more information. Is it a partisan witch hunt? You bet it is. New York Times reporters are now saying that it's pretty clear that Obama's people are leaving trails of breadcrumbs everywhere. And this, again, is good reporting by the New York Times.
And the idea there was that, you know, you don't want to be in a situation where only so many people know it. It's much easier to contain that information. So you spread it out. And then you take that raw intel and you take the most sensitive information, the sources, names, the human intelligence names, and you put that into the deepest compartments you can find, into places where only people with intelligence clearances are going to get to it. You're not going to get political appointees looking at it, things like that. And I think that was kind of the bigger idea here, that you wanted to get this out there, and you wanted to then leave a bit of a trail of breadcrumbs, such as it is, for investigators, especially congressional investigators. One of the ways you could do that, and we were told people did, is every day their intelligence briefings that go on. You ask a briefer specific questions. They have to come back with written answers. Those written answers are archived, and any, say, Senate investigator would know to go look at them.
Okay, the reason that I say that this is good reporting is because what he's saying right here is that the Obama people have basically planted a lot of material there. Now, is the material fake? Is it real? Presumably, it's real, but there obviously is an attempt to sabotage Trump before he even gets into office, and that's something that we have to keep in mind. Okay, time for some stuff I like and then some stuff I hate. So, things I like. This week, this entire week, we've been doing movies that should have won Best Picture but didn't. This one's a little bit more controversial. So, in 1994, Forrest Gump wins Best Picture. I am not a huge Forrest Gump fan. I think Gary Sinise is fantastic in the film, but I'm not a Tom Hanks fan. I think that the film itself is really haphazard and sloppy. It's not my favorite film by any stretch of the imagination. There's another movie that I think people now know to be a much better movie, but at the time, it made no money at the box office. It's based on a short story by Stephen King. Stephen King's short stories, by the way, are significantly better than his novels. His novels are all 1,000 pages and have no ending. All of his novels basically end with everything blew up, and that's the end of the story. It's like the end of the Wagnerian Ring cycle. All of his books are a bajillion pages, and they always end with, and then everything burned. It's like, okay, great. You could have just skipped to the last page and saved me all the trouble. His short stories are good. His The Shawshank Redemption is the film, of course. And this should have won Best Picture in 1994. Really good script, really good movie. Is it the world's fastest movie? It's a strangely addictive movie. It's actually a really slow movie, but it's strangely addictive because the script is really good, and the score is quite good as well. Here's a little bit of The Shawshank Redemption. If you've never seen it, I'm sure you have, because if you've ever browsed a TV, it's always on somewhere. And it is also the most easily imitated film of all time, with Morgan Freeman doing the voiceovers. Here is a bit of The Shawshank Redemption.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've heard all the evidence. I submit that this was not a hot-blooded crime of passion. Consider this. A revolver holds 6 bullets, not 8. That means that he fired the gun empty and then stopped to reload.
By the power vested in me by the state of Maine, I hereby order you to serve 2 life sentences back to back, 1 for each of your victims. So be it.
They send you here for life? That's exactly what they take.
I believe in 2 things. Discipline.
Help me, Dad!
And the Bible. Here you'll receive both.
Andy came to Shawshank Prison in 1947.
Why'd you do it?
I didn't, since you ask.
You gonna fit right in.
I must admit, I didn't think much of Andy first time I laid eyes on him. He had a quiet way about him. A walk and a talk that just wasn't normal around here.
There are places in the world...
Movie, obviously, if you haven't, I'm sure everyone's seen it, but it's a great movie, Shawshank Redemption. You should check it out, and then you should walk around doing your own voiceover narrations about members of your family, because it is humorous. She was coming out of the bathroom, and she had left a scent behind. You can really do it about anyone. And no, I'm not talking about my wife there, honey. In any case, let's talk about other things that I like. So, Sean Spicer apparently has, this is the second time that he's worked as the Easter Bunny. Or he's worked at the White House. The first time he was the Easter Bunny, really. This is a picture of Sean Spicer as the Easter Bunny at the White House. And people are making fun of him for this. Yeah, good for Sean Spicer that he did it, but he was actually really the Easter Bunny at the Bush White House for the Easter egg role. He was an administration official who was tasked with wearing the costume. He said, the limited vision can be dangerous, not so much for the bunny as for the little kids running underfoot. He said, early morning is key. Because if you do it later in the day, then it's too hot. It seems to me that he had a better job when he was the Easter Bunny. Being the press secretary now is kind of a rough job. Okay, time for some things I hate. Let's do it. So, a thing I hate. I have never been a huge fan of Sir Patrick Stewart in Star Trek. I always liked Shatner better than Patrick Stewart. Patrick Stewart was sort of the Obama of the interstellar world, and in that sense, not a huge fan of his character. He was always the guy who was trying to make peace. Shatner always said that he was trying to make peace and then would go to war for no reason, which was great, and screw all the alien women. And, you know, you really live out the American fantasy in space. In any case, Patrick Stewart now says that he wants to move to the United States. Why does he want to move to the United States? I'll give you three guesses, and they all rhyme with Trump. Here is Sir Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
But I'm not a citizen. However, there is, maybe it's the only good thing as a result of this election. I am now applying for citizenship.
Oh, good. Oh.
Because.
Why?
Because I want to be an American too, because all of my friends in Washington said there is one thing you can do. Fight. Fight. Oppose.
Resist.
Oppose.
Okay, so he wants to come here, and then he wants to fight by being Sir Patrick Stewart. I just, why? Did we need you here? Like, what? There aren't enough lefties here that are bothering us? We needed you here to bother us too? Like, it was deeply, deeply important that we did this? Again, this is silly towns, and it just demonstrates the self-importance of actors, that they think that it's very important that they come here just to protest Trump. Yes, I'm sure that Trump will resign because Sir Patrick Stewart is now on the bridge. I'm sure. Double face palm for Sir Patrick Stewart. Okay. Other things that I hate. So, I am not the only college speaker who's been shut down at universities before. Apparently, Charles Murray, the professor and sociologist who wrote most famously The Bell Curve, but he also wrote a book called Coming Apart about disparities in the white community. He was protested at Middlebury College, which is this very upscale college in Vermont, and hundreds of college students protested the speaker. And I love this headline. Charles Murray, number one, is not a white nationalist. Okay, that's insane. Charles Murray's book, The Bell Curve, talks about supposed IQ differentials among populations, which is the most controversial part. It's like a three-page section of a 450-page book about IQ changes over time. And it's heavily caveated. And yet, that has defined his entire career because everybody who's racist wanted to say all black people have lower IQs than all white people, which is really, really silly. Thomas Sowell has talked about the differentials in IQ and how they move over time. How the fact is that when Eastern European Jews came to the United States in the 20th century early on, they actually had much lower IQs than the average population. Now they have higher IQs than the average population. And part of that is learning language and learning culture. And part of that is values put on education. In any case, the headline from the Washington Post is college students protest speaker branded white nationalist. Who branded him a white nationalist? The students did, but the students are idiots. They call me a white nationalist, which is insane. It's patently insane. Here's the Washington Post. Speaker Charles Murray wrote The Bell Curve, Intelligence and Class Structure in American Life and Coming Apart, The State of White America 1960 to 2010. And Coming Apart is one of the great books of the last 10 years. Coming Apart is a really, really important book that talks really about a lot of reasons that you've seen this sort of living standard gap. And it's solely in white America, he talks about in Coming Apart, between sort of rich and poor in white America. Middlebury College students turned their backs on Murray just as he started to speak and chanted, "Who is the enemy? White supremacy. Racist, sexist, anti-gay. Charles Murray, go away. And your message is hated. We cannot tolerate. Is hatred. We cannot tolerate it." So, yeah, that's not a message of hatred at all. That's a message of tolerance. This is fully crazy. Now, the fact is that they could have asked questions about Charles Murray and his research. They could have said that Charles Murray, you know, they didn't like his research. But the idea that Charles Murray is some sort of racist is just ridiculous. And Charles Murray has talked openly about what the Bell Curve said and the controversy surrounding all of this. it's amazing to me. It's amazing to me that he gets so much flack. Here's what he said. This is in an interview that he did 20 years after the bell curve came out. This is a couple of years ago. He said, "Why did we talk about race at all? Not because we thought it was important on its own. In fact, if we lived in a society where people were judged by what they brought to the table as individuals, group differences in IQ would be irrelevant. But we were making pronouncements about America's social structure. If we hadn't discussed race, the bell curve would have been dismissed on the grounds that we refused to comment on the reality that IQ tests are invalid for blacks, which makes their whole analysis meaningless. We had to establish that, in fact, IQ tests measure the same thing in blacks as in whites, and doing so required us to discuss the elephant in the corner, the mean difference in test scores between blacks and whites. Here's what we said. We said there's a mean difference in black and white scores on mental tests, historically about one standard deviation in magnitude on IQ tests. This difference is not the result of test bias, but reflects differences in cognitive functioning. The predictive validity of IQ scores for educational and socioeconomic outcomes is about the same for blacks and whites. Those were confidently stated conclusions about black-white difference in IQ, and none of them was scientifically controversial." And he says that not much has changed between then, you know, since then. And he talks about how IQ changes, and what he said, what we were not saying is that there is that genetically blacks and whites are different. He's saying that the IQ test measures things, and people's IQs are what people's IQs are. That's what he said in the bell curve, and I'm looking at the interview right now. Here's the paragraph they said. They said, "If the reader is now convinced," this is in the bell curve, right? If you'd read the bell curve, you'd know this. "If the reader is now convinced that either the genetic or environmental explanation has won out to the exclusion of the other, we have not done a sufficiently good job of presenting one side or the other. It seems highly likely to us that both genes and the environment have something to do with racial differences. What might the mix be? We are resolutely agnostic on that issue. As far as we can determine, the evidence does not yet justify an estimate." In other words, anybody who says that their book is basically saying that blacks are genetically inferior to whites didn't read the book. Didn't read the book. So, but that doesn't matter. They call them a white supremacist anyway, just demonstrating once and for all that they don't know what the hell they're talking about, and they're willing to say anything in order to smear people, which is truly disgusting. Okay, final thing that I want to talk about today and things I hate. Lots of things that I hate today because it's a Friday and I shouldn't be here. In any case, Riz Ahmed is a Muslim who starred in Rogue One. A Muslim actor, he starred in Rogue One, which is a movie that I enjoyed. And he explained on some sort of telecast, he said, "If we fail to represent," he said he wants more Muslims on TV. "If we fail to represent, we are in danger of losing people to extremism. In the mind of the ISIS recruit, he's the next James Bond, right? Have you seen some of these ISIS propaganda videos? They're cut like action movies. Where is the counter-narrative? Where are we telling these kids they can be heroes in our stories, that they valued? People are looking for the message that they belong, that they are part of something, that they are seen and heard, and that despite or perhaps because of their difference, they are valued. They want to feel represented. In that task, we have failed. If we don't step up and tell a representative story, we are going to start losing British teenagers to the story that the next chapter in their lives is written with ISIS in Syria." What? So, in other words, if you don't cast a Muslim as James Bond, a bunch of Muslim youths are going to go to Syria and join ISIS? This seems kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh, yeah, Islamophobic to me. That Muslims are right on the verge of joining ISIS if they don't see a Muslim on TV. Beyond that, this is also part of a broader conversation the left constantly wants to say. They want to say, if we don't have major cultural figures who are gay or black or Jewish or Muslim, then that means the various members of these subgroups, they will be victimized in American life. This is half of Barack Obama's case. If you elect me president, then black kids all over the country, they'll know, and they'll know they can't strive. But if you elect me, I promise you, those black kids from now on, they will know they can be anything they want to be. Listen, any opportunity to break out my awesome Obama impression I'm going to do. And then you had Hillary Clinton. And in the last election cycle, she did the same thing. All her people said, you had Lena Dunham out there, "If Hillary wins, now our children that we don't abort, they will know that they can be president too." Yeah, I have a 3-year-old daughter. She can be president. You know, I didn't need Hillary to be president for her to be president. In fact, I'd prefer not. But this is the intersectionality of the left, that you can only have heroes who are of your race. You can only have heroes who are of your sex. You can have only heroes who are of your sexual orientation. Okay, when I was growing up, I'll have to bring pictures of this. When I was growing up, my hero in terms of history and public policy, my hero was John Adams. And so every Purim, you know, which is the Jewish holiday coming up in about a week and a half here, every one of those Purims, I dressed up as John Adams. You know, I put on the red coat, the long coat, I put on the white wig, the whole deal. Was John Adams Jewish? Turns out John Adams was not a Jew. And it turns out John Adams was not an Orthodox Jew. In fact, were many of my heroes Orthodox Jews? You know, like famous Orthodox Jews? No, because it turns out there aren't that many super famous Orthodox Jews, actually. So that meant that a lot of my heroes were baseball players and astronauts and mostly historical figures, Winston Churchill, John Adams, Abraham Lincoln. Those were the people I admired, none of whom had anything culturally in common with me, except for the fact that they were outgrowths of Western civilization and Judeo-Christian values, just as I am. Yeah, I don't think I'm better than anybody else in this respect. I think you can find heroes who are virtuous no matter what their race, no matter what their gender, no matter what their sexual orientation, no matter who they are. I think you can find heroes. And this idea that you have to see Muslims on TV in order for Muslims not to join ISIS is pretty degrading to Muslims all over the planet. I didn't need a guy wearing a yarmulke on TV to teach me how to be a hero. I had my cultural heroes, and truth be told, my cultural heroes were not nearly as important as my actual heroes, you know, people like my father, who did wear a yarmulke and modeled behavior for me that I followed. You know, my dad's my hero. My mom's my hero. She's an Orthodox Jew in Hollywood every day, right? Those are my heroes, and those are most people's heroes. How about this? How about instead of worrying about the number of actors who look like you on TV, how about we start worrying about the idea that the people around you should provide role models for you, and the people who are virtuous in public life should be your role models no matter what they look like? That seems to me a recipe for a better system and a better civilization. Okay, well, today, I lied yesterday. Today actually is the end of the week for the Ben Shapiro Show. We will be back here on Monday. Try not to ruin things while I'm gone. I'm Ben Shapiro. This is the Ben Shapiro Show.